Wall Street veteran Bernard Madoff has been arrested and charged with running a $50 billion Ponzi scheme.
Congress wants to know what caused the Enron meltdown.
Now, while the collective rage currently is focused on WorldCom,
Tyco CEO Dennis Kozlowski was convicted of looting hundreds of millions of dollars.
This is one of the biggest fraud cases ever.
Their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook.
Find out more on this week's episode of White Collars, Red Hands.
When you're having a hard day, there's nothing like biting into a piece of decadent, creamy chocolate. The caramel exploding in your mouth, dripping down the sides of your chin. We all... Why are you looking like that?
That's gross. What are you talking about? You seriously wrote that thinking I wouldn't be like that? That's fucking gross? Okay. You're more ridiculous than I thought. You're even a bigger silly goose than I thought if you wrote that thinking I was
serious. I knew you were going to like have some reaction.
Well, I had a very predictable reaction, I think.
We all love a good treat. Everyone around the world loves to indulge every now and again. In Japan alone, the confectionery business makes about 8.1 billion US dollars per year. Kit Kats, Poke, or Pocky. No. Kit Kats, Pocky. You name it, we love it. However, what if someone tried to take down the confectionery business as we know it? What if someone tried to extort candy makers out of millions of dollars? What if they even decided that kidnapping was their only option? Today, we look at the story of the monster with 21 faces and how they tried to take down the Japanese confectionery business as we know it.
That's right. You heard it here, everybody. We're talking about the evil Japanese Willy Wonka. All right. This is the one where Augustus Gloop actually gets killed. All right.
Yeah, they are very fat phobic over there, so they would absolutely kill that child.
The marshmallow fluffing room is just them fucking
murdering,
putting one in the back of his head.
Oh, God.
Marshmallow gun. It's evil gun. Willy Wonka.
Okay? Marshmallow gun. Oops, it was a real gun.
Marshmallow was in quotation marks. No one saw that. It was wordplay.
Oops. Well, welcome back to a brand new episode of White Collars, Red Hands.
I'm Kashan.
And I'm Nina. And today, we're talking about the monster with 21 faces.
Too many.
Too many faces. That sounds like a nightmare. You know, it really does.
Just sounds like it does sound like something out of a nightmare. Am I also going to be in my underwear for this?
Are you not wearing any underwear now?
You don't want me to answer that.
Oh, gross. Continuing on with our story. On March 18th, 1984, two masked men entered the home of a 70-year-old woman in Nishinomiya in Japan with a rifle and a pistol.
Were they like 3 feet tall with green hair and orange skin?
No.
And were they singing a fun song when they came in?
Oompa loompa doompity-doo. I need the... Oh, shit. I don't know.
Put the cash in the bag or I got a bullet for you.
Oompa loompa doompity-dee. If you are wise, you'll... Listen to me. Well, I didn't even change the words.
I tried. It works. That Oompa Loompa is a gun. You better listen to him.
The Oompa Loompas would be exponentially more scary if they had guns.
You know what? I think that's true for most anything, but it's
doubly true. Spoiler alert to the new Wonka movie. He actually
pulls
all
up.
Have guns.
What's that guy's name?
Timothy Chalamet?
No, that plays the Oompa Loompa, the British guy that from Love Actually.
Hugh Grant.
Yeah, Hugh Grant just pulls out a Glock at one point. Really weird choice. Just halfway.
Glock.
Halfway through.
All right, so the two masked men entered the home of a 70-year-old woman in Nishinomiya, in Japan, with a rifle and a pistol. They tied her up, cut her phone lines, but money wasn't what they were after. They were after one, only one thing. the key to her son's house next door.
They broke into a house so they could get the key to the house next door?
Yes.
Alright, I feel like there's some holes there, but we can pass by it.
While the men were terrorizing the old woman, Katsuhisa Izaki was taking a bath after a hard day at work while his wife and three children settled into bed. Izaki was the president of Izaki Glico, a candy company in Japan. Izaki Glico, better known as Glico, is a candy company that produces products in 30 countries. Some of their best delicacies are Pokey and Pretz. And those are all over the place.
Pretz?
Yeah, it's like these little pretzel things.
Wow. All right.
Well, the company was founded in 1922 in Osaka, Japan. If you know anything about Japan and know anything about Osaka specifically, the Running Man thing in the middle, the like Running Man display, I don't want to call it a statue. It's like this big, giant running man over the river in Dontonbori.
I don't know anything about Osaka,
It's the Glico.
Oh, they're there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, they're in Japan, but they have like this big, I don't even know what to call it. I don't know if it's a sign or like a billboard almost, but it's like this gigantic running man. And it's like a tourist thing to see.
Well, for those watching the video, I'll put a picture here because I don't know what she's talking about. So now you do too. It looks like this.
Some of us have seen it in real life.
It looks like this. That's definitely a sign or a billboard or something. Yeah, something exactly like you said.
The masked men tied up Izaki's wife and eldest daughter and also cut their phone lines. They were really into cutting phone lines while the two younger children slept peacefully. Izaki's wife told them that she would give them money, but again, money wasn't what they were after.
Give us the key to the next house over.
We want the key to your uncle's house.
As long as he's your neighbor, we're just really trying to get through this block.
Izaki was startled when two men burst into his bathroom and forced him out of the tub and out of his home, leaving him naked the entire time. He was thrown into a van and they headed towards a warehouse in Ibaraki, Osaka, the third largest city in Japan. Upon kidnapping the president of the company, the kidnappers wrote a ransom note demanding 1 billion yen, which was at the time in 1984 was about 4.5 million US dollars. And they also demanded 100 kilos of gold bullion, which is a refined metallic gold. And they all asked for all of this from Glico, the company.
That's a lot of money.
Yes. No, it was. The total that they were asking for was about $6 million, the highest ransom that had ever been asked for in Japanese history. Up until that point. I don't know about after that.
I hope no one's broken the ransom record.
That's not a good record to break. It's not a good one. Although they demanded money to release Izaki, he managed to escape the warehouse on foot 3 days later. Izaki got out of his ropes, broke down the door, and escaped, wearing the clothes that the kidnappers had given him. They unfortunately had neglected to give him shoes. When he escaped the warehouse, he found two railroad employees and asked them to help him contact the police. Izaki had absolutely no idea who had kidnapped him, and other than a couple scratches on his face, he was unharmed. The kidnappers also told him that his 8-year-old daughter had been kidnapped as well, but that was not true. I think they were just trying to scare him. It was very interesting. They covered his head with a bag. So that's why he didn't really know who they were. He knew when he escaped, he knew which warehouse he was in, but.
Well, because he looked back.
Yeah, he looked back. But
that was not hard.
They fed him juice and crackers. They took decent care of him, considering.
What kind of juice, though?
I don't know.
It's like tomato juice. It'd be like.
Yeah. It was thought that the kidnappers were someone close to Izaki and his family due to the fact that it seemed like they knew their routines and that they, and also like where to cut the phone lines, where to, they knew that the mother-in-law had a key. or the mother had a key, all these things. It seemed as if someone had been watching the family or was someone close to them. Now, Izaki escaped, but it didn't stop the kidnappers. On April 10th, 1984, three cars were actually set on fire at the Glico Company headquarters. And on April 16th, a plastic container containing hydrochloric acid was found at one of the Glico warehouses, and it contained a threatening letter.
Just a jug of acid?
Uh-huh.
Unopened?
A big old jug of acid.
You better watch out, because guess what? We know where to find acid.
Well, the letter threatened to poison Glico products with potassium cyanide.
Which is not acid, but okay.
This caused panic all over the country and caused Glico to pull all products off the shelves for fear that the goods might have been poisoned. And, you know, this was just precautionary. They pulled the products off the shelves, and this caused major loss for the company. Glico lost over $21 million and had to lay off hundreds of employees as a result of the threats.
Yeah, it's like the Tylenol murders here in Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where briefly, for those of you who don't know, someone poisoned a bunch of Tylenol and with cyanide, and that is why we have those safety seals on all medication now.
This was a major win for extortionists who further taunted the police with a letter. The letter read, okay, so I will say that the this is translated from Japanese. So
if it sounds stupid, it probably sounded menacing in Japanese.
Yeah, it's not going to sound the same in English as it would in Japanese. The letter read, to the police fools, are you stupid? What the hell are you doing with all that manpower? If you're professionals, then come on, catch us. We'll give you a hint since you're so handicapped. There are none of us among Izaki's relatives. There are none of us among the Nishinomiya police. There are none of us among the Flood Prevention Corps. The car I bought was gray, and the food I bought was from Dai, which is, I think is how it's pronounced. It's a grocery store in Japan. If you want more information, ask us for it in the newspapers. After telling you all this, you should be able to catch us. If you can't, then you're just tax leeches. Shall we kidnap the head of the prefectural police too? The letter was signed as the monster with 21 faces.
So they were like ACAB for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, they were ACAB for sure.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if they think all cops are bastards.
All cops are fools.
I was going to say, I think they're ACAS, which is all cops are stupid.
You police fools.
Or ACA, all cops are handicapped.
Yeah, are you handicapped?
When I read that, I was like, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, you know that was some fucked up slur in
whoa.
Japanese.
Whoa, yeah. Yeah, it probably is like the R word, the Japanese R word.
Also,
probably.
What was that thing about the Flood Corps? What the hell is that about?
I think that they were a thing. I don't know. Actually, I don't actually know what they meant by that, Flood Prevention Corps.
Okay.
There's a lot of things that the monster with 21 faces did that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I'm going to be honest with you.
It's AI generated.
Yeah.
40 years ago, it's AI generated.
Calling well, you know what? We are in Japan and they are... They are technologically very ahead of us. Yeah, a bidet in every bathroom.
And they developed AI in the 1980s.
The Monster with 21 Faces was from a children's novel by Itogawa Rampo. The story was about a thief who, quote, stirs up the newspapers every day and is so good at disguising themselves that they are unrecognizable. It was crazy that Japanese police were unable to pinpoint who was the perpetrator of these crimes. Just to put some put this into perspective and put some Japanese police stats up, in 1983, Japanese police solved 97.1% of murders and 55.3% of thefts. In the same year, the U.S. had solved 73.5% of murders and 17.3% of thefts. Now, Japan has a wildly smaller population than the United States, but still. And also, they murder a lot. They have a way lower crime rate. However, what this is showing, though, is that at that time, I'm not sure what the stats are now, but at the time, the police were very highly effective. So them not being able to figure out who this person is really tarnishing to the police's reputation.
I'm going to be honest. 73.5% is way higher than what I thought it was going to be for America.
Oh, me too. Me too.
So that's kind of sad that I'm like, wow, 73.5? They were doing pretty good.
I mean, now, how many murders went unreported? We don't know. But those are reported murders.
I don't know.
Crazy. Crazy. Over the next year and a half, the kidnappers would send over 100 letters. Their crimes were seen as Gakkaijo Hanzai, or crime as theater. So people were really, although they were scared, this was very entertaining. Or it was like a spectacle.
Dude, one guy got a couple of scratches. So at this point, at least, like, no harm, no foul, right?
Well.
Oh, come on.
They'd put their, so when they would write these letters to police, they would put a lot of useless clues in their letters that would lead police on wild goose chases that led nowhere.
Like the flood corps?
Yeah.
The flood prevention corps?
Yeah, yeah, and it would make them look really incompetent. And due to the linguistics of the letters, it was clear that the letters were coming from Osaka. On June 26, 1984, the monster with 21 faces made a truce with Glico and issued a letter saying, "We forgive Glico." Glico had claimed that they did not give in to any of the demands that the monster was making and that they never paid them any money.
Just, you know, had a change of heart.
Yes.
It happens.
Yes.
They're doing a My Name is Earl, like going back and making up with all the people that they've wronged in the past. Good for the monster with 21 faces.
Yeah.
We're proud of them.
There was a suspect who was found on a security camera who was putting a package where the poisoned candy was supposed to be. So they thought that maybe he could be tied in with this because he was putting Glico products where it should have been on the shelf, even though they had all been recalled.
Probably just didn't know, right?
Well, no, like they had been taken off the shelf and he came in with Glico products and was putting them on the shelf. Mm. And he was not an employee at the place.
Oh, it was just a random dude?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, that's suspicious for sure.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Unfortunately, the security footage was really poor and they couldn't get a good look at his face.
You mean, like, which one, though?
What?
Which face? What are you talking about? He's got 21, all right? You can't get a look at one?
No, they couldn't get a look at any of them.
That smells of a cover-up.
He was known as Video no Otoko, which means video man.
Great.
They were super, super creative with these.
He's the video man.
There were also phone calls in an attempt to extort that were, like, they were trying to extort people that were released to the police. But instead of, I'm going to just redo all that. There's also phone calls in an attempt to extort that were released to the public. Instead of scary gang voices or men's voices like you would expect, these voices belonged to women and children, which was honestly a little bit more creepy.
Yeah, I feel like that's got to be 10 times worse, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Now, Glico was not the only company being targeted by the monster with 21 faces. In September of 1984, rival candy company Morinaga also received threatening letters that something bad would happen if they did not pay $410,000.
That's way less money.
Way less money.
They went from asking for $6 million to just like, okay, can you please just give us like 400 grand?
Can you please? Please? That's
like enough to pay off like a PhD.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, literally. Morinaga did not pay up the money. In October, a letter went out to Japanese newspapers stating that Morinaga candy would now be poisoned with cyanide. 20 boxes were said to be poisoned from Hakata to Tokyo, which the two cities are about 6 hours apart.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It is Evil Willy Wonka.
It is Evil Willy Wonka. It's like the golden ticket.
But, like, not like that at all. Yeah. Like death, though. Yeah.
When candy hit the shelves, some of the packages were labeled danger, cyanide. The candy was taken off of the shelf.
At least they were nice enough to put a warning.
They did put a warning.
Right.
only one of the packages had enough, like after they pulled them off and tested them, only one of the packages had enough cyanide to kill someone.
I think one is enough to still be scared.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's like anthrax in the 80s. Like everybody was afraid to open up their letters because it's scary. I'd be afraid.
Yeah, I just stopped eating candy.
Well, no one ate the candy, but the letter warned that that they would poison more packages in the future and that there would be no warning. About 40,000 police guarded grocery stores across the country, but nothing came from this. Morinaga was so affected by this that they had cut down their production by 90%. The incident was causing so much harm to the company that the government had to step in. The government encouraged, they ended up encouraging people to buy their products and also invest in the company to keep it from going under. By March 1985, 31 food companies had been harassed by the monster with 21 faces. And the monster continued its rampage and started harassing the food company Marudai. They promised that they would stop if they gave them 50 million yen, about $210,000.
So this is like Deal or No Deal. They're so just keep going down. They just keep coming down.
It just keeps going down.
All right.
The plan was, so no other company had succumbed to their wishes. Marudai was going to. The plan was that an employee of Marudai would ride on a train from Osaka to Kyoto. There would be a white flag displayed when the employee would know when to throw the money out of the train. The police went undercover as a Marudai employee in order to catch the monster. While the undercover cop was on the train, he noticed a man who was staring at him. The man was large. Some would say he was brawny. He had short, permed hair, and it was said that his eyes looked like, quote, that of a horse or a fox.
Those are very different animals with very different eyes.
Literally what I said. Foxes and horses do not have similar eyes.
They are quite different. Horses have weird human-like eyes.
And they're big.
Yes.
Yeah. And foxes have, like, little eyes.
Yeah, and they're not...
scary or human-like.
Yeah, they don't look as much into your soul, I would say.
No. He would later become known as the Fox-Eyed Man.
The Horse-Eyed Man did not stick. Not as catchy.
not as catchy. Now, while the officer made his way to Kyoto, the white flag was never displayed. And when he got on his return train to Osaka, the Fox-Eyed Man was on the same train. The police officer contacted another undercover cop to follow the man, but when he changed trains, they lost him. Now, the monster with 21 faces continued their reign of terror when they extorted 100 million yen from the House Food Corporation.
Oh, they went back up. They asked for 50 million yen the last time. Now they're back up to 100.
Well, they were like, hey, we got 50 million out of that one guy. Let's get 100 out of this guy.
But they didn't get it. They didn't throw it off the train.
Well, they were going to.
Well.
Investigators saw the fox-eyed man again at a rest stop near Otsu. The money drop was supposed to be in a can under a white cloth. But when the drop point was reached, the can and the white cloth were on the ground, signaling that the deal was off. An hour prior, police had seen a station wagon sitting idle. The station wagon was sitting 50 meters from a white cloth on a fence. The officer who saw the station wagon had no idea about the cash drop, and he approached the vehicle. The man inside the car, he was a thin man, about in his 40s, wearing sunglasses and a baseball cap.
He was also about 3 feet tall with orange skin and
green hair. When the cop approached the car, he sped off and led them on a chase. The man had evaded the police. The station wagon was found near the Kusatsu station in the Kyoto prefecture. When checking the station wagon, a police radio was found, which explained why the monster with 21 faces was always able to stay one step ahead of police. They were able to listen in on conversations between officers in 6 different prefectures. It was also found out that the station wagon was stolen. So you were saying that they were upping the price? This was also because they were continuing to threaten new product. Like, I think the reason they were able to do this was because they were still threatening to poison products.
Well, yeah, it's kind of their own. That's all
that's
they got.
Their thing. So the true identity of the monster with 21 faces was never found. It remains an unsolved mystery to this day. And now, although it seems like a fun cat and mouse game between the monster and the police and the public, people actually suffered from this. This was a very highly sensationalized case in Japan, mainly because things like this aren't that common in Japan, especially in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Japan is a very safe, pretty crimeless, I wouldn't say crimeless, but low crime country. So something to this extent is pretty unheard of and would capture the attention of the entire country. So over 28,000 tips came into police, and Japan really put a lot of manpower behind this. They put over 130,000 police on, like, at during the course of the 15 months that this was going on, 130,000 police officers served on this case and were trying to solve it. The Shiga Prefecture Police Superintendent Yamamoto was taken off the case because of his failure to solve it. Now, Yamamoto was so overcome with the sense of failure that he not only failed his police force, but also the entirety of Japan. I'm going to do a trigger warning right here. This next thing is like kind of extreme. He was so upset that he poured a can of gasoline on himself and set himself on fire on August 7th, 1985. He died of self-immolation.
Okay. I'm going to say this. I think a little bit of an overreaction.
I mean, I would also agree.
I think just a little bit of an overreaction.
Yeah, I mean, they're very, like, this is very, what's the word I want to, what's the thing they would do when they fell on their swords?
Harikari?
Is that what it was called?
Absolutely.
When they fell on their swords?
Yeah, it's like suicide.
Harikari?
Yeah.
It's like Harry Carey of the Chicago Cubs.
Yeah, but it's very different.
They're two very different things.
Those are the opposite sides of... Not the same coin. They're very different.
Wow. I didn't know that was what that was called.
Yeah, Harikari. H-A-R-I-K-A-R-I.
Oh.
It's like...
Or it's like a kamikaze.
Suicide out of, like, honor. Like, you feel dishonored, so...
Yeah, that's what this was.
So you kill yourself to save your family. The dishonor of your fuck-up.
Yep.
That's
what he did. He Harikari'd himself.
All right. I mean, come on, man.
I mean...
One guy. You didn't catch one dude. It's fine.
Well, there could be 21 of them. Upon the death of Superintendent Yamamoto, the monster with 21 faces issued a letter expressing their condolences for Superintendent Yamamoto. The letter read, "Yamamoto of Shiga Prefecture Police died. How stupid of him. We've got no friends or secret hiding place in Shiga. It's Yoshino or Shikata who should have died. They have been doing... What have they been doing for as long as 1 year and 5 months? Don't let bad guys like us get away with it. There are many more fools who want to copy us. No career, Yamamoto died like a man. So we've decided to give our condolence. We decided to forget about torturing food-making companies. If anyone blackmails any of the food-making companies, it's not us, but someone copying us. We are bad guys. That means we've got more to do other than bullying companies. It's fun to lead a bad man's life. Monster with 21 faces.
It's fun to lead a bad man's life. You know what I'm talking about? And I'm a bad man. How do they know all these letters were written by the same person?
Well, they don't.
Could this not just be like someone just being like, fucking around and sending these to newspapers?
Well, they did believe that there was more than one person who was behind all this.
21 faces.
Yeah, there's 21 of them. At least.
It's like the fucking...
monster, 21 faces.
The Yakuza or some bullshit?
Yes. Okay, we're gonna get to that, actually.
Oh, alright. Yep.
The monster with 21 faces was never heard from again. Although the true identity of the monster was never found, there were theories that police and the public had of who was behind the monster and who one of their 21 faces might be. One theory was that this was an inside job, but this was debunked pretty quickly. People think that Izakai was one on, Izakai was in on it from the get-go, the guy who got kidnapped, partially because Glico's candy was never poisoned and Marinaga's was. However, the situation hurt Glico horrendously. Then they had to lay off like almost 1,000 employees and lost millions of dollars. So that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to try to undermine one company when your company is going to suffer all of this loss.
Yeah.
A second theory was that someone was seeking revenge on the companies. In 1955, Morinaga was using a stabilizing agent in dry milk that contained arsenic. 12,000 infants were injured and 138 died.
Jesus.
Many survivors still suffered to that day, and it was thought that maybe one of the victims was seeking revenge. However, if that was the case, why target all food industries?
Also, they got poisoned by their products, so they decide to poison other people?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
That's kind of a really mean way to go about it.
Right. It was also thought that the monster with 21 faces could be an employee who was fired from one or both companies, especially Glico, considering how targeted the acts were towards them and the fact that they were able to get in the parking lot, get into the building. Things like that. They knew where the president lived.
Of course they could get into the building. They just broke into the building next to it and asked for the key. All right? They got the hack, dude.
You're right. Some thought that this was a ploy from North Korea trying to destabilize the Japanese economy.
This got like full conspiracy theory.
Oh yeah, it really did. Some people are like, yeah, like North Korea's done a lot of crazy things in order to like try to bring down other countries, but I don't really think that this was it. I mean, like, why target candy companies? Because like Glico was a big company, but they weren't like the company to. It's not like when General Motors fell in the United States. Like, the economy wasn't going to tank if Glico went under.
Maybe Kim Jong-il just really hated Pocky.
Maybe.
It was like those stupid fucking sticks covered in chocolate.
He could.
Everyone, I know all of our people are starving, but let's go fuck with the Pocky companies. Because
well, you know what? They have fucked people over in the past. Another theory was that this was put together by the Yakuza to make themselves rich. And they also thought this because after the final letter, a war broke out among the Yakuza. The Yamaichi War broke out, which was a four-year bloody war that restructured the Yakuza as we know it. Now, after all of this happened, only one man was suspected to be the monster with 21 faces. Manabu Miyazaki was thought to be part of the dubious scheme to blackmail businesses out of their money. Miyazaki looked like the fox-eyed man, and Miyazaki was also a former employee of Glico. Miyazaki had actually been part of a whistleblowing incident where he called out Glico for inappropriately disposing of waste into waterways.
Shouldn't be doing that.
Should not be doing that.
It's the SDS. Come on.
Yeah. I applaud him on that, actually. Miyazaki's father was also a Yakuza boss, which also explains the tactics behind the crimes. And although he was suspected, he had an alibi. But some think that he was actually the mastermind behind these crimes.
The Yakuza, there's an entire mafia of people to actually do the crimes. That's how it works.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But it was also thought that the monster with 21 faces never wanted money in the first place. They just wanted to gain knowledge on how the police operated and their tactics.
For what? That sounds way more sinister.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him. If it was Yakuza, they might have done that.
Yeah, fair enough.
But even if someone were to come forward with knowledge about the monster, it would be in vain. In March of 1994, the statute of limitations had passed for the kidnapping of Izaki. And in 2000, the statute of limitations for attempted murder had lapsed for the poison food products.
I don't know if there should be a statute of limitations on attempted murder.
I agree with you.
But
here we are.
All right.
Cheaters never win, but in this case, extortionists and kidnappers do. The monster with 21 faces used his disguises to fool the Japanese police while simultaneously striking fear into the hearts of the public. Japan, known for its safety and tranquility, was rocked to its core with this case. Times were not sweet during 1984 and 1985 when candy sales had dropped 10% because of these crimes. If the monster with 21 faces was attempting to make money, he failed. But if the monster with 21 faces was trying to disrupt Japanese society as they knew it, he succeeded.
Okay, so here's the thing. Theory. The monster with 21 faces was a dentist, okay? And after years of filling cavity after cavity.
Is this Wonka?
Finally, well, it's I guess it is the Willy. The
backstory?
The Johnny Depp Willy Wonka backstory, the worst one.
Okay.
And finally, after years of filling cavity after cavity, he decides to exact his revenge upon the candy companies that have caused all the tooth decay by kidnapping and sending threatening letters. And then it just kind of blew up out of proportion from there. And yeah. Also, he has very fox-like eyes.
Yes. 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 I agree with you, Kashan.
That's the white collar shed hands theory, yes. At least.
And if you want more theories like that, you can check us out on social media. We are on Facebook.com/whitecollarsredhands. We are on Twitter at whitecollarspod. We are on Instagram at whitecollars_redhands. We are on TikTok at whitecollarsredhands. And we are on YouTube at White Collars, Red Hands. If you want another free way to support us, please leave us a review. Most of you are listening on Apple Podcasts, but a lot of you are also listening on Spotify. If you could go give us a review, that would be great. We'd love a 5-star review, but we will also take a honest review. If you want another free way to support us, tell a friend. Tell a friend. Word of mouth is a great way to spread knowledge, so we would appreciate that. And if you want an unfree way to support us, you could go to our website, whitecollarsredhands.com. Click on the merch tab. I am actually wearing one of our sweaters right now. Super soft. I've had it for several years, and it's still pretty nice inside. So good investment. Mother's Day's coming up, so get your mom a present. What else?
You said to tell a friend.
Yeah, I said that. Oh.
Website? Fans.
If you have a white collar crime that you have heard of and you thought, oh my gosh, Nina and Kashan should cover that, you can reach out to us on email at whitecollarsredhands@gmail.com. You could also DM us on any of our social medias. If you know me personally, you could text me. You can also Venmo me $20, and then I will make sure that your suggestion gets talked about on the show.
You can send a letter to address redacted.
Yes. Those are all great ways to get a hold of us. And I think that's it.
Sounds it.
All right. Thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you next time on another episode of White Collars,
Red Hands.